Welcome back to 90 Feet Away. I'm Coach Eric Holtz, and it's great to have you back with us. As I mentioned before a couple different times, I am going to have some tremendous guests on here talking about baseball, softball, but life's journeys. Today, I have an incredibly special young man with me that unfortunately I never got to coach, but I have watched him grow and develop as a man, and his story is an incredible one. His family's journey is just an incredible one. Help me welcome Skylar Mercado. Skylar, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Dude, this is awesome. I've been looking forward to this. Skylar Mercado, born and raised in the Bronx.
Yes, sir.
Talk to the audience. Where'd you grow up? Where do you live?
Well, I'm from Castle Hill area of the Bronx. Not too far from Throgs Neck. I know a lot of people know Throgs Neck more than Castle Hill, but born and raised in the same house. My grandparents own the same house, so you know it's kind of like a family legacy house. So
I grew up not far away. I was born in Parkchester. I grew up in Co-op City, which we were kind of rivals. Our little leagues were kind of rivals growing up. Did you always have a love for baseball, or where did that start for you?
I mean, as a kid, you know, my dad was one of the biggest Yankee fans that I've ever, you know, met, like including my grandfather. Like, just, it's kind of something that was ingrained in our DNA from day one. So
you feel like you had any option at all to be a Met fan?
My dad's brother was, is a Met fan.
Ouch.
You know, my brother ended up rebelling against the family and also becoming a Met
fan
as well.
No shot. Austin? So,
yeah,
really?
Yeah,
okay. See, for me, my dad grew up on the Grand Concourse, and he would be like 99 years old right now. He actually got to see Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig play. So for me, hearing those stories, you know, before he passed, was just incredible. Like, there was no shot, right? The Mets, when I was born, the Mets weren't even in existence yet, right? I was born in 65. They started a few years later. So, yeah, there was no shot. There was no shot of me being there. Today, I don't mind rooting for him. I like watching him play a little bit. So you go to school in the Bronx, elementary school, intermediate school. From there, where do you end up going to high school? What's your high school career like?
I ended up going to Archbishop Stepanak in White Plains. I went to a camp my eighth grade year. I had a bunch of friends from the Bronx that ended up going there. And it was interesting to me because I understood their baseball history as well. They had just been to two city championships back-to-back years. So that was something that really intrigued me. My godfather, my dad's best friend, ended up going to St. Raymond's, which is really walking distance from my house. And when I went to the camp, our assistant coach, Keith Richardson, his best friend, Coach DeLuca, who ended up passing away not too long ago, he always goes to the summer camp. And he was asking me, like, oh, you're from Castle Hill? You're not coming to St. Ray's? What are you doing? And I was like, you know, well, I don't want to stay in Castle Hill for the rest of my life. That's something that, you know, I want to go and venture out and
What was the attraction of Stepanak for you? You know, leaving your comfort zone, right? You live, as you said, walking distance to St. Raymond's. St. Raymond's has a pretty good history. Shout out to Cliff Gonzalez, who I grew up with and went on to play pro baseball. Pretty good baseball. What made you leave?
It's funny. My godfather did win two city championships, I believe, with St. Ray's, so he kind of always held that over my head. But the facilities. St. Raymond's didn't really have the field. They played at St. Joe's of the Deaf. And Stepanak has field on campus. It wasn't just baseball. I was also interested in football and basketball, and they were up and coming. And, you know, when I went on my spend the day, it was one of the best experiences I've ever had. Even the food in the cafeteria was great. So it felt like a no-brainer.
It felt like a comfortable home for you. We're gonna take a break right there on your journey. I want to go backwards a little bit. When I look at you, I see a lot of my life through you. You're a lot younger than me, 29, I believe.
About to be, yeah.
About to be 29. Okay, I'm close. Probably the worst, well, definitely the worst attack in the history of this country was on 9/11. And we lost thousands and thousands of people, both first responders as well as people that were, you know, living and working in downtown New York. But to some people, those thousands and thousands of people are just names on a wall. They're names that are inscribed at the Freedom Tower. But that wasn't the case for you.
No.
I'm getting chills just thinking about this. But you lost your hero that day. You lost your father on 9/11. I've seen you refer to him as your Superman, or he was Superman. And you were excited that he was actually down there because he was Superman and he was going to help fix what was going on down there when he ran into the towers to help people. I was 11 when my dad passed away. You were 6 years old. Nothing in this world can prepare you or your mother or your two-year-old brother, literally without any warning, that your life was going to change forever. Do you remember what that was like? Do you remember 9/11? Do you remember how you were told, how you found out?
So there weren't many memories I have from, obviously, you know, back then, but that is one day that does stick out to me. I remember going to, I was in first grade. I went to Santa Maria in the Bronx, right off of Zariga Avenue. And I remember my mom coming to pick me up from school. And she picked us up to, in a hurry, to take my brother and I to my grandmother's house so she can head down there. And I remember asking what was going on. She said that there had been an attack on the United States and my dad was down there to help. And I remember being excited, obviously, like you said, because, you know, I thought that he was going to be the one to end it all, put out the fire, do all that stuff and save as many people as he can and, you know, come home to us at the end of the day.
I mean, your father is a 6-year-old as Captain America, right? There's nothing he can't do. So you're pulled out of school and mommy takes you to grandma's house. How did you guys find out that your father had passed?
We didn't really, I didn't really know until even a couple of years later. Cause like, I just didn't understand the concept of death at that time. We went down to the firehouse a lot, just waiting to get any word back from hospitals, any word of mouth from the firemen that were down there looking.
You know, I believe half of Daddy's...
only one survivor.
I was good. Only one survivor, one survivor in the whole house.
In the whole house. And he was... he broke in a lot of bones. His name is Kevin Shea. He was in the hospital for over 2 years, I believe, because of how many broken bones he had. But yeah. Mm.
So obviously, my mother became my hero. As I grew up, I wasn't an easy child by any stretch. But as I got older, I appreciated her more and more. I know what kind of relationship you have with your mom. Your mom, to me, is a superhero.
Yeah.
What was growing up like? And how did you really find out about dad, and how did your life change? How did Austin's life change? I mean, again, you're six, he's two. So a couple of years later, you figure out that your father is no longer on this earth. You're eight, he's four. What's life like for you guys?
It's extremely difficult in the fact that my brother was only two, so he doesn't have any memories. And that was probably the toughest part, you know, trying to help him understand what was going on. I had to grow up pretty fast. I don't want to say the man of the house, but I had to help raise him and help him in school and all that stuff. So it wasn't a normal childhood for me by any stretch of the imagination. So
and like, you were a baby also.
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, 8 years old.
I'm trying to raise myself.
Yeah,
I have to get raised myself. So,
but you don't have time. I mean, you got to take care of your little brother.
Yeah.
Castle Hill baseball. I've said it before. I've talked about it in my journey. The coaches, the father figures, the strong male role models that I had through baseball helped me through an incredibly difficult time. Did you have that at Castle Hill as well? Did you have some people to kind of step up and help out a little bit?
I did. I did early on. My mother was one of my coaches. So she understood how athletic we were at a young age and tried to interject herself in that and help us as much as she could within her own understanding.
Did she know the game?
She understood enough to do the book. Not necessarily coach, but you know, just be there.
She was supportive, yeah. And that's amazing to me. Again, my mom too. My dad died at 11. My mom would come to the game. She knew nothing about anything, but she was there. She was a presence in my life, you know, forever. I'm gonna jump to a totally different subject here. Ball has always been incredibly important, regardless of what kind of ball. Your grandfather, Mr. Mercado, before your father, Stephen Mercado, was incredibly involved in stickball in the Bronx. Your grandfather instilled the love of stickball to Stephen Mercado, and from everything I've been told and read and looked into, not because I'm talking to you, but your father was like the man. Your father was pretty much the man.
He was the guy.
He was the guy for Bronx stickball.
Yeah.
And now you and your brother have pretty much taken that over. When was the first time you knew that stickball was so important to your family? Not to you necessarily yet, to daddy and to grandpa.
I didn't realize how big it was until probably, I want to say 2018, my first year of Pro Bowl, where ESPN approached us wanting to do a story on it. That was the biggest thing that I've done interviews before and all that stuff, but when ESPN said that they wanted to do a piece on this during the Subway Series of that year, I'm pretty sure the Subway Series fell on Father's Day that year, so it was like, that's when I realized how big this really was. You know, my dad's dream was always to take this to the Olympics.
Stickball. Wow.
If the Olympics ever came to New York, he wanted it to be the demonstration sport. And that was his biggest dream. And unfortunately, when he passed, like that part, most of that dream went with him. So
this is a tough question because I don't know that you even know this answer, but what started Grandpa into stickball? I played stickball, right? I mean, you know, born and raised in the Bronx, you have to play stickball. But I never had the passion for stickball the way I had for baseball. Do you know what got Grandpa so into this? And then why Steven took it over and took on running stickball in the Bronx?
Yeah, my grandfather had a bunch of friends and they all played on teams. Obviously, you know, streets played against streets back then, races played against races and stuff like that. I know a lot of his friends moved to Florida, where he ended up moving anyway, but a lot of his friends moved to Florida and they ended up bringing teams back up. So they would have, you know, Miami versus New York or Orlando versus Harlem and stuff like that. And they were just like, let's make a league out of this. So they found a street over what used to be Newman Avenue and then They all created what is now Stickball Boulevard.
It started out as Stickball Boulevard, right? It is now called
Steve Mercado Stickball
Steve Mercado Stickball Boulevard, which is pretty badass. Out of just incredible respect for your father. This game, this Bronx game, that's been played forever. We're not talking about kids doing travel ball. We're talking about people traveling from all over the country with their own teams to the Bronx.
Yeah.
Play stickball.
This is our professional sport. We are the professionals of stickball.
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, it is.
So you really find out about this in 2018 playing pro ball. We're going to go back to your career. But now you fast forward to 2024, you're pretty much running the stickball tournaments, leagues there in the Bronx. You've taken over.
Yeah. After my playing career was done, I always wanted to make it a point to get as much involved as I can and use as much connections as I can, because I've made friends with a lot of major leaguers who have all-star appearances, you know, stuff like that. So if I can get the word to them and they can get interested and pull people in and get the eyes, you know, and get the shares and stuff like that on their social media, then I can get it back to, I don't want to say just me, but we can get it back to a point where my dad saw, you know, it's to a point where we're going to France this summer, and it's not everybody can afford it. So, sure. You know, it is what it is, but I'm making it a point for myself and my family to make sure we go, because this is a stop in getting to that Olympic dream that my dad had.
That's very interesting, because after coaching the Olympics in 2020, 2021, because of COVID, baseball is taken out of the 2024 France Olympics. Softball is taken out, and that sport it was replaced with, which I still don't.
Breakdancing?
I still don't look at it as a sport. I've never seen it judged.
No, I don't know. But
is breakdancing. Breakdancing for me growing up was a street thing, and it was cool as hell. Don't get me wrong, but it wasn't a sport. Nobody was judging it, whatever. So I think that's pretty cool that you're taking stickball to France in the summer that they threw baseball out. Dude, that's awesome. That's amazing. A lot of what I talk about on this show, Sky, is mental health, is anxiety, is trying to help children understand what makes them able to perform, not able to perform, what they're going through, how I ate, how I slept, how I'm behaving. I know without a dad, myself, normally you get off the field and the first person you call is your dad. My sons would do that. My daughter would do that through their college careers. How did you deal with that?
My mom. My mom and my brother.
So mom and Austin became your go-to, and they let you feel like you weren't missing anything.
As much as they could.
As much as they could. I know for me, it was difficult going to games and seeing full families, what you look at as a normal family, right? Mother, father, siblings, knowing my father wasn't there. Let's go back to high school. You have a pretty good high school career. At what point do you think you're good enough? Every kid thinks they're going to play pro ball. Every kid that ever put cleats on and tied the laces thinks they're playing for money. At what point did you think you were good enough to get out of the Bronx, to go to Westchester to play at Stepanak, and just to play college ball? I'm not even talking pro ball yet. At what point did you think that was where you were headed?
I would say my sophomore year of high school. My sophomore summer going into my junior year was the first time I played real travel ball. Like, I wasn't just playing locally in, you know, these Westchester leagues and stuff like that, because I played for the Diamond Buddies growing up, which was a pretty good organization, but we didn't really go outside besides the sports at the beach. I had the opportunity to play for an organization called the South Florida Bandits, and I traveled down there to play an entire summer that started in the first week of June until like the second to last week of August.
You stayed down there?
I stayed down there. They provided hotels. So, and I played well enough to receive two verbal offers from the University of Central Florida, UCF, and Florida Atlantic University. And that's when I realized.
As a sophomore. Okay. So you come back from that summer, and now you're a junior at Stepanak and making a name for yourself, you know, in the area. How are you doing in school?
School was school. I don't want to say I didn't do well. I just didn't. I don't think I asserted myself enough.
Skylar, there's nothing wrong to say here. Yeah. I was an awful student. Yeah. But it wasn't because I wasn't smart. Mm-hmm. I didn't like authority. I didn't like school. I didn't like my teachers. I didn't like to learn what I didn't want to learn. I was also diagnosed ADD as a senior in high school in 1983. Wasn't a whole lot they could do for me.
Yeah.
But you were a smart kid.
Yeah.
So whether you did well in high school or not, you tested incredibly well for the entrance exams. When did things get real for you as far as college offers? And you said you had two verbals as a sophomore, late sophomore summer, and now you're back. Do you go back to play for the Bandits as a junior?
My junior summer going into senior year, I ended up switching over to Team Sidious.
Okay.
It wasn't a New York just base, like they had two, like a Texas base and a New York base, but at that time it was Texas and New York combined. Guys like Andrew Velasquez, Nelson Rodriguez, Fernelli Sanchez were all guys that I had ended up playing with. That's when it really picked up. Once the recruitment, like when schools could call you, that's when things really picked up. I heard from schools like Ole Miss, Old Dominion, West Virginia, Michigan State. But there were only my main goal was to go to a school where I was going to play and I was going to get the most money.
So you start out USC, right? University of South Carolina.
No, I started out at Maine.
Oh, you started out at Maine.
Started out at Maine.
So you start out at University of Maine. So this kid from the Bronx, from Castle Hill in the Bronx, is going to one of the coldest places in the country to go play baseball. They probably don't have grass until May. How do you decide on Maine?
I got offered at Area Codes. And the recruiter said, you know, let's take a visit. They flew us, my mom, my brother, and myself out to Maine. And when we got on campus, I had the head coach and the coach who recruited me. My brother had two coaches with him, and my mom had two coaches with her. We walked the campus. Everybody went their separate ways. They toured the campus all together. It felt the same way Stepanak felt when I went on my spend the day.
For everyone that doesn't know what Area Code is, as a junior going into senior year, New Balance has sponsored, it's basically the best of the best from all different regions of the country. You need to be recommended by either a college coach or a pro scout to be invited. It's invite only. It's not like you can sign up. It's not like a PBR or a perfect game. You have to be invited to go to this. So you leave your visit, and did you know right away, like, that was it? That's where you wanted to go?
As soon as I left my visit, okay. I told my mom, that's where I want to go. I did take a visit right before that to Delaware State, which those are the only two schools that offer me full scholarships.
Okay.
I took a visit to Delaware State, and about a week before my visit to Maine, and the coach called me saying, from Delaware State, called me saying, you have to make a decision before the week is up, or we're gonna pull this scholarship.
Pull your offer. Yeah.
And I was like, Coach, I appreciate that. I understand the position you're in, but I'm going to weigh all of my options. I'm going to take this visit. If you want to still hold and afterwards, then I appreciate that. But after this visit, I'm most likely going to make my decision. Okay. And actually, they only offered me about 80% scholarship at the time. When I told them that, he said, okay, I'm going to call you right back. He called me back and he said, what about 100% offer?
Okay.
We'll pay for everything.
This is Del State.
This is Delaware State, yes.
So you decide on Maine.
2 days after.
2 days after.
2 days after my visit.
You you finish your senior year at Stepanak, have a really good season. Now time to go to Maine. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful place. Beautiful state, beautiful everything. How long do you stay at Maine?
I was in Maine for the entire year.
1 year?
1 year.
Why? What happened?
I have never received an injury serious enough to keep me off of the field until I got to college. The third game of my freshman year, we're playing against University of Miami. I dive back to the bag. I get landed on by 240-pound first baseman. I dislocate my shoulder. We get back to Maine after that, and I'm questioning surgery, rehab, and all this stuff.
Non-throwing or throwing?
Non-throwing. But it's affecting the swing to the point where and it's affecting me catching the ball to the point where I can't even lift my elbow to my shoulder.
Sure.
They had a couple kids suspended, so they were telling me that I couldn't take time off. They needed me to play. We were playing Clemson the next weekend on ESPN. My brain, I'm like, I'm the starting infielder now as a freshman for a school that's about to play on ESPN against Clemson. I have to play. Mm. They wrap it as tight as they can. I can barely lift. I'm barreling balls and they're going absolutely nowhere. Mm-hmm. I have an abysmal hitting weekend in Clemson. I'm hitting the ball hard. It's just not going mm-hmm. anywhere. Mm-hmm. And then we go through an entire stretch in Florida where I'm still playing, but I end up getting dead arm where I can't even lift my arm off my side. So I go to try and make a play. I make a couple errors. I get into it with the senior captain because I didn't make a play for him. And my mental health from there just started to decline.
You know, I hate to say this. You know, in 2024, I can't imagine that knowing you were broken, right? Like you were broken. One of the most important parts of your body was broken. You couldn't lift it, and they kind of pressured you into playing. I can't imagine that happening today. The Clemson series, was that it for you?
No, I ended up playing against, Iowa at Stetson. We played pretty much an entire month. Our first month of ball was playing in Florida. We played like Snowbird, Northeastern, Brown, schools like, you know, a bunch of Northern schools down there, but we also played some Florida schools. And after that, I think I played one or two more series at home, Hartford and UMBC. And I was so mentally checked out that it got to a point where...
Mentally checked out how? Mentally checked out because I'm hurt? Mentally checked out because I'm hitting like garbage? Mentally checked out because I can't lift my arm? Or mentally checked out because my coach is making me play knowing that I feel like garbage?
Honestly, it was everything, including school. I was just so out of it at that point where like baseball was just kicking me down so much that I slacked off in school, and just there was so much going on, and I felt like my coaches had been giving up on me at that point, where I wasn't even asked to come to practice. Like I got suspended because my grades were so bad. Like it was just a lot going on.
So it was like a vicious circle, right? Because you don't feel good about yourself, and then you don't necessarily care about your grades. And then if I don't keep up my grades, see, this is what I try and explain to kids, that being a Division I baseball player, okay, it's sexy. Yeah, I played D1. It could be one of the hardest jobs to manage. I am a 18, 19-year-old kid. I have to take care of myself physically, mentally, emotionally, and academically. A good friend of mine used to say to me, there are three parts of school: athletics, academics, and a social life. Pick two of them, because you can't do all three of them well. You're feeling like shit. Do you finish the year? Do you get out of there okay academically enough? No, you don't.
Academically, I got out okay enough to end up at a junior college. But baseball-wise, I didn't finish the entire year. We were supposed to play Manhattan College in VanCortlandt on my birthday, and I was asked to not come on the trip.
Ooh, which would have been a homecoming for you, right?
Exactly. Right. So I texted our assistant coach, who went to Manhattan College. He's from New York. He went to Molloy, so like he's a CHSAA guy, and I felt like I had a decent relationship with him. He's now the head coach at Maine, and I asked him. I said, "Hey, like I feel like our head coach, who's now at Stetson, I felt like he's giving up on me. Is there something that I can do? Like I'm trying. Like I just need some help." And he says, "Yeah, come into my office. Like we can talk." I get into his office, and I ask him again, and he says, "I got to be honest with you, Skyler. Like my original evaluation of you was never good. I never thought you were a Division I baseball player. You're probably better off just leaving." And I'm sitting there, and I couldn't help but chuckle and laugh, because they hype me up as the next big shortstop to leave here, because there's a bunch of – they have a long line of shortstops who end up getting drafted. Jeremy Peña is the latest one, who just won MVP of the World Series.
Yep.
So,
yep.
You know, he came right after me, and that hearing that was – it felt like the nail in the coffin at that point.
But, you know, coaches don't want to admit mistakes. You know what I mean? And not that you were a mistake, but – sometimes you can't control it. And we talk about it, you know, controlling the controllables and the stuff we can't. You're playing with a separated shoulder. You're there on a full ride as well. For people that don't understand, again, you know, you're talking about playing at D1 level and getting a full ride. Well, most people, that's absolutely not true, because a fully funded Division I program has 11 and a half full scholarships to give out. That's it. It's not like football. It's not like basketball. So that gets spread around. Usually they'll get a sexy pitcher throwing mid-90s. That's the guy that gets a lot of the money. Very rarely will a position player get that. They may try to mix in some academic money.
They got me. So they got me as much athletic scholarship money that they could, and then they just found a way to get me.
And you didn't care where it came from? You didn't care where it came from?
No, not at all.
But what I'm trying to tell the audience is it's incredibly rare. Academic, yes. For the parents listening to this, 10 out of 10 times, I would prefer your children get academic money. Why? Academic money cannot be taken away if they maintain a 3.0 grade point average. Your athletic money can fluctuate based on your performance. So if you didn't know that, now you do. Academic money. Make sure your kids are doing as well as they can in school. That can't be taken away. You leave Maine. Do you get fixed?
Nope.
So you have this broken shoulder, separated shoulder.
Yep. Partially torn rotator cuff and labrum.
Perfect. And I'm laughing because I don't think any athlete at any decent level has ever played healthy, ever, right? Somebody's dinged up, banged up, injury. Everybody knows my story. You head down south. you go from the northernmost state in the union and the coldest down to South Carolina. How's that go?
It was a great experience, to be completely honest with you. JUCO is like no other monster.
But it's not sexy.
No.
JUCO isn't sexy.
No.
I just want to play D1, Skylar. I don't want to go to JUCO.
If I would have known what JUCO, that was my attitude coming out of high school. If I would have known what JUCO was like, especially down south, out of high school, I would have went to JUCO first.
JUCO's down south. It's almost like the minor leagues. You get guys that basically don't care about school that want to get drafted. So they go play JUCO.
Yeah,
correct?
No, 100%. That's exactly
right. You got
right.
Every guy down there is a stud at his position. And again, there's nothing sexy about being a JUCO bandit. Why would I want to be a JUCO bandit, man? I want all the gear for my D1 so I can show everybody that, you know, I was the 32nd player on a 35-man roster, but I got nice clothes to show.
Yeah.
The level is kicked up, even from D1.
My JUCO would have
Just beat demolished me.
Yeah.
Okay. How do you play? How do you respond to that?
I started the season off great. Especially my fall season. My fall season is when I ended up getting my...
Had you done any rehab for the shoulder?
As much as I could.
Okay. So you're still playing...
As much as I knew. I went to a rehab place for a little while, and then I just tried to continue what they showed me.
Okay. Go ahead. You started off great.
Started off the fall great. Got my offer from South Carolina Aiken. I ended up getting another Division I offer, but my classes weren't transferable. So I couldn't go back to Division I. I would have had to have taken another year in JUCO. My main concern my entire college career, which I felt like hurt me a little bit, was just playing. I should have ended up getting a medical my freshman year, getting surgery, getting healthy, and then, you know, taking it from there. I should have did it my sophomore year, because at the beginning of the regular season, a little less than halfway through, it came out again. And then I got two shoulder impingements where I couldn't throw.
You know, and I don't want this to be a financial thing, right? But Skylar's options at that point would have been, A, have this taken care of, get a medical red shirt, not lose by year. Oh, and by the way, University of Maine would have paid for your shoulder. But now you've left the school, right? They're not taking care of this anymore.
No.
Right.
So that's where I'm at. I had two shoulder impingements. We had a transfer from NC State who ended up taking over the position. And now I'm in a platoon scenario. But I'm already committed to South Carolina Aiken going into the season. So I'm set with that. But trying to get my shoulders right so I can go into USC Aiken as healthy as I possibly can, close to 100% as I possibly can. And we had one of the best teams in the entire country in Division I JUCO. We were third in the country. We ended up losing our Region 10 tournament to this school called USC Sumter, who I think ended up playing Monroe in the in the big regional to go to Grand Junction. And that was the end of my JUCO career right there. But heading into USC Aiken, I was missing two transferable classes. So I had to stay the fall in my JUCO, finishing those classes in order to be ready for spring of my junior year. And I got those classes done. I go into Aiken, probably like the second or third day we're in scrimmages and inter squads already. And they have the starting lineup, and then they have the reserves playing against each other. Mm. They have a freshman at second base. They already have their shortstop, so I'm going to second base. They have a freshman there. So I have to, you know, do my thing and show what I'm capable of. I had gained almost 20 pounds of muscle at that point. I've been kicked my own ass that entire winter in order to get to where I know I want it to be. Mm. And I won the starting job, and I ended up leading off for them that entire year, going to the regional championship.
So you finish up at USC, right, Aiken? Then what happens?
I'm kind of in an in-between. I want to play pro ball. I didn't get drafted. Tried to hit too many home runs my senior year, mm-hmm. in order to get more looks, but it's not my game. And I'm trying to find any opportunity to play pro ball. One of my buddies that I played at Aiken with got an email about the California Winter League.
Okay.
He wasn't going to do it, but he sent it to me saying this is something that you could be interested in. And I signed up.
Again, for the audience, California Winter League is a league where a bunch of guys looking to play independent ball or possibly get signed by an affiliated team go out and play like a 40-game, 30-game in a month, in 1 month. You pay to go. You pay to be there. You pay to stay there. You have to fly yourself or get yourself there. But it's an opportunity to be seen. So you start this journey – and you're trying to get seen, your dream is still real. Pro ball doesn't mean I'm playing second base for the Yankees. I mean, pro ball, I could be getting paid $1,000 a month. It's still pro ball, right? I'm being paid. That's what professional actually means. I'm getting paid to do something. So you're chasing this dream and out to California. And then the craziest thing happens, COVID. So COVID just throws a wrench in everybody's world. And you play in the COVID league for the Brave. We've talked about that in past episodes. I helped Sean Riley put two teams together for the Boulders and the Brave. The Brave actually lost in the championship.
Which we shouldn't have.
But you shouldn't have.
I'm not going to talk about
that. That is what it is. But from there, you still chased a little bit. And that chase took you to Jersey, Kentucky, fill-in stints here and there in the Atlantic League, right? Really the highest league of independent baseball. To Dunn. I've always said I'm going to play until somebody tells me I can't. The day that you decided this was over, what was that like for you? Were you okay with that day?
No. And part of me still isn't, because physically I know I can do it.
Physically, you're in better shape now than you were when you were in high in college.
Physically, my swing is better than, like you said, the other day.
I can attest to that. Yes, I attest to that.
And I just think it's because I've always had an issue of telling myself, I have to do it. I have to get this done. I have to get to this position, this spot.
Is it I have to get there, or I have to be the best Skylar Mercado I can be?
That was never it.
That was never it.
It was, I have all these people counting on me. I've made a promise to the dead, the living, all of it. And I just put too much pressure on myself. And when I get in the box, it was just.
You weren't able to clear your head.
I wasn't able to do it.
Yep.
No.
What we go through in life obviously makes us who we are. I love you for several reasons. But for me, I would say the biggest reason is when you're working with the next generation of baseball players, you're not full of shit. You're caring, you're passionate, you're trying to help them in every aspect of the game. Me too. You grew up without a father. Me too. make it harder? I don't know. People say to me all the time, how'd you grow up without what choice did I have?
Just did.
Right? You just did. What option did I have? What's next in your journey, Schuyler? What's next as Schuyler gets closer to 30 years old? I know you're an uncle now and a proud uncle, right? I know you're a proud uncle and family is everything to you. But but what's next for Schuyler Mercado?
I'm enjoying coaching. I really am. I think I am taking the next FDNY test. So that is something that I know that I can live with myself doing and be happy to go to work every day.
Oh, my God. Would you wear your father's number?
I would.
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
And work,
oh
in,
my
the,
God.
And work in the same house.
Is that what you would want to do?
Yeah.
Oh, dude,
it's
I got
right
chills.
Smack in the middle of Amsterdam Avenue right by Lincoln Center.
Dude.
So it's
so that would be like the best of both because as a fireman, you could do that full time and then you could still do baseball on your off days and still do stickball and do all of the things that make you happy.
Exactly. And even be here with the kids that, you know, I've enjoyed to come to know.
And the kids enjoy having you. Again, like I say, you can't fake passion. You can't fake caring about somebody. They see through it. And I'll tell you what, if they didn't, I do. I would. Sky, I will tell you, man, you know, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of Austin. I'm proud of and I've said this to your mother. You know, your mother met me for the first time, and I just gave her the biggest bear hug. And she must have been like, who is this crazy guy, and why is he doing that? Because I understand what she went through, and I respect what she went through. And growing up in the Bronx might not have been so easy with what you went through. It could have been very easy to veer off that path. You did an unbelievable job. Thanks for sharing some of your story with us. And just thanks for being you, man. Thanks for the passion you bring to everything you do. And best of luck, man. Wow, the FDNY. I got chills thinking about taking dad's number and working in daddy's firehouse. People have said this to me my whole life, that my dad is proud of. And now my mom, obviously, they're together. I'm sure your dad's looking down with the biggest smile and the most pride, just the man that you've become. So thank you for being here, my
thank
man.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity. I appreciate it.
This is awesome. Wow, this was a little bit different. This took us all over the place, a little bit sideways. But this was incredible for me to spend some time with Schuyler. Not every story is sexy. Not every story is in a straight line. A lot of people's paths kind of go this way until we figure out who we are and where we're supposed to be in this life and in this world. Thank you for spending time with us today. Thank you for being here. Do me a favor. If you like what we're talking about, tell your friends, subscribe to our channel, 90feetaway.com. We look forward to seeing you again. Have a great day.